I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is what October does to me. I got so distracted by baseball and football that I burnt my bacon this evening. Sucks. Really sucks. I'd been saving this bacon for quite a while, actually. And it was in the freezer, and I had not just one, but two different soups that I was going to use this bacon on top of. I had leftover loaded potato soup from my crock pot, and it's so much better with bacon. And so I went out, I raked leaves, I bagged leaves, I did some yard work, hard manual labor for a good, for almost an hour until it was dark. And then I got inside and I was all excited for my leftover potato soup, sour cream and bacon on top. It was maple bacon. Oh, I was so excited. So I put it in the oven, per the usual. When I pull out the tray after 12 minutes, it's not quite as crispy as I want, but I turned off the oven just because it's still hot inside. And I put it back in for a couple more minutes, took two pieces, and then put the bacon back in for a couple more minutes. And then I forgot it was in there. And so by the time I went back into the kitchen, had finished my soup and needed to get up out of the chair and just before I got really settled in to watch baseball and football and opened up, I could smell that it was overcooked. Opened up the oven door and the bacon was black. The bacon's not supposed to be black.
It's like, yes, crap.
Just the worst. I wasted all that bacon. I mean, I still ate a piece of it, but I don't love extra crispy or I don't love burnt anything. I don't even like dark toast. I'm not going to throw it away. I'm going to make myself eat it because I'm the one who burnt it. So I do not throw away food unless it's bad. So that's what October does to me. And I briefly had this conversation with myself on Thursday, how much longer can I keep doing this? October is going to be the death of me. But you know what? Nobody cares about that. And it briefly comes and goes in the month of October when it never stops. Then I get excited again about the opportunity to talk sports and to look ahead to the football weekend, of course, and to talk about what we saw on the baseball diamond tonight. And so it'll pass. But I'm mostly sour over the bacon because I'm a dumbass and because I just forgot. I was busy doing other stuff, but that is literally October. I start one thing, I get busy doing eight other things, most of them work, and then by the time I remember that other thing, this is something else I did this week. I turned on the water in my sink to rinse out my cold brew carafe. It's a glass pitcher. Anyway, I turned on the water. And then something outside of my porch caught my attention or distracted me or something. So I went outside to do whatever it was that I was going to do out in the porch. And I came in like 60 seconds later and the water's still running. This is what I do in October. I move from one thing to the other because my brain is always pulled in a million different directions. And you know, it was a perfect day for Penny to not even be remotely interested in me sleeping either. She didn't want to sleep, so I didn't get to sleep. So you know. Gonna be a little salty, a little sarcastic on this edition of After Hours, but at least I'm here. And at least the weekend is almost here. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Producer James, I'm sure you won't be surprised by this. Do you want to know, after I posted about the bacon, because I just needed to vent a little bit, I got all kinds of cooking tips about how to cook bacon. Okay, that's not the problem. Some guy was like, you just need to be patient. Either put it in the oven, which is where it was, or put it in the fry pan on low heat. Like, he was very earnest in giving me all kinds of tips. Because I must have burnt the bacon because I suck at cooking. That must be the reason. Some other guy was like, how do you burn bacon in the microwave? Have you ever made bacon in the microwave in your life?
No, I've never made bacon in the microwave.
I didn't even know you could make bacon in the microwave.
Yeah, I didn't know
that sounds
was like
icky,
a thing. Yeah.
Actually. Blah.
That
so
sounds
anyway,
like a trip to the hospital.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound healthy at all. So, yeah, I appreciate the cooking tips. Thank you so much. There are a few things in my life that I do not need. Tips on driving, tips on cooking, tips on baking, and I definitely do not need tips on how to do my radio show. And yet somehow people offer those anyway. Like I told you, salty. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. No, I still don't have a Facebook access code. Thank you for asking, but I'm cheating anyway. Nothing.
They didn't, even though you
Nothing.
Tweeted out at them and directly put it to public that, hey, we need this, they still refuse to send you a login code.
No acknowledgement whatsoever. Nothing.
I don't understand.
I don't either. This is really funny, though. There's an account out there, apparently, and they must sick people. Like, anyone who tweets about having problems with Facebook, they must sick these either bots. They're either bots or they're real people who work for this company that apparently will fix your Facebook login issues, or if you've been blocked or kicked off the site, they will. It's almost like negotiating with the IRS to get your tax problems settled. Or you know, another great example is your timeshare. You know how people get into a timeshare and it's essentially for life and they can't get out? And there's these companies that you pay to negotiate your withdrawal from the timeshare. So apparently there's a company out there that handles these types of Facebook problems for people because they get locked out of their accounts. Or so I get about 7 or 8 of these people telling me, oh, you can just go to this particular company and they'll fix it for you. I'm not paying to get this Facebook issue fixed. It's not my fault.
Also, that sounds incredibly suspect. Let me just give this random people who I've never met before
my
all of my information. I don't know about that.
I mean, I don't care. If you want to lock me out of Facebook, lock me out. Like, do what you got to do. I just, you know, shrugs. Don't really care that much. We're cheating and using someone else's login. So what's the difference? Anyway, I almost stopped reading my mentions on Thursday because I just couldn't take it anymore. Between the tips about cooking bacon and the ideas about how I should get back into Facebook. Ooh. And my abs hurt from raking leaves, so no more laughing. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Typically, we start with football. We'll get to football coming up inside of 15 minutes, I absolutely promise. But once again, a wild swing in one of the championship series. Man, it's like a pendulum. You ever seen those huge pendulums that swing back and forth, back and forth? Or maybe you have a smaller one, a metronome, which is a small pendulum that you might use to keep time if you're learning an instrument or playing an instrument, learning a new song. We had a metronome on the piano that I used when I was growing up. And so I just remember that thing back and forth, back and forth. And you can change the timing, of course. You can make it go faster. Well, the pendulum swinging back and forth in these championship series, it's drastic. So we're talking ginormous pendulum that just keeps going back and forth. And when the Braves jumped out to a lead in game 5 of this NLCS, and when Joe Kelly was forced to exit the game before the first inning was over. So top of the first inning, Joe Kelly has a meeting with Will Smith on the mound. And then quickly, the pitching coach, Mark Pryor, the trainer, Dave Roberts, they're all out there on the mound. Trey Turner, Chris Taylor, they're just all, everybody's all together on the mound, and something was going on. Joe Kelly walks off the field, and we find out later that shoulder stiffness or something like that. And so he can't even make it out of the first inning. And not only is it a bullpen game, but Dave Roberts is caught unawares without anybody ready to go. And so Joe Kelly's given up a two-run home run to Freddie Freeman. doesn't make it out of the first inning. And man, not only did the Braves strike early, which is what they've done and have used successfully as a springboard, but now the Dodgers are in an even worse situation. They knew it was going to be a bullpen start, but not like this. Except every time you think you know about sports, you don't know. Here's one thing that I kept waiting for, and I didn't know if it was going to happen, but generally a team facing elimination, especially one that has championship heart and mettle like the Dodgers, we know they do because they've had this incredible run of, what was it, 8 NL West titles and multiple trips to the World Series until they finally won in 2020. This is a team that's built to win. So despite all of the injuries to their pitching staff and the fact that they can barely field a rotation right now, the fact that you've got one starting pitcher with a dead arm, another starting pitcher that seemingly has developed all kinds of issues since he had this great regular season, it's just the complete opposite. The Dodgers starting pitching and their woes with all the injuries has finally caught up with them. And where were the bats? I mean, generally the bats can pick up the slack and can cover up for the pitchers, but we hadn't seen that in the last game. And so the top five hitters for the Dodgers in game 4 were 0 for 17. And so that couldn't continue if the Dodgers were going to stay alive in this series. So a couple of things that stand out, of course, is that they struck back and struck back almost immediately against Max Fried. Something else that stands up. When you lose Justin Turner, you're already without Max Muncy. Now Dave Roberts has to retool not just his lineup, but also his defense because he's got to move guys around. But lucky for him, he's got a Cody Bellinger who can play 3 or 4 different positions. He's got a Chris Taylor who can move all over the field. And he's got Albert Pujols, who has seen a couple of starts and at-bats here and there, but hasn't been a major factor in the postseason to this point. Well, he ends up, this is really neat, he ends up with 2 hits and a walk. So he's on base in front of Chris Taylor for most of the night.
Fried delivers, and that one is hammered to left, and it's on its way, and it is gone, a home run! Just like that, the Dodgers have a 3-2 lead. Taylor loops one into center field. That's going to drop in for a base hit. Pollock will score. Pujols holds at second base. The Dodgers lead 4-2. And Chris Taylor has knocked in 3. Chris Martin set at the chest, now delivers. And there's a fly ball to center field. Racing on back is Duvall, and it is gone! This night is tailor-made. Chris Taylor, a 2-run home run. The Dodgers now lead it 6-2, and he is knocked in 5. The 2-2, Taylor with a fly ball to deep left center field. Chris Taylor has hit his 3rd home run of the night and becomes the 11th different player in baseball history with 3 home runs in a postseason game.
Do you know who one of the others is? Albert Pujols. Pretty neat connection. And I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but a lot of the Dodgers, when they have these big moments, these home runs, it's high fives, it's these fun handshakes, it's these little dances and rituals they go through. But when each of these younger guys has a big hit or comes through in the clutch, do you know what happens with Albert Pujols? A huge bear hug. He's like their dad. He's the elder statesman. And so not only does he have all this experience, but now he's part of this huge game in which the Dodgers offense breaks out and he gets to see Chris Taylor replicate a feat that he previously accomplished.
Seeing CT, you know, have a performer like this is pretty special. I mean, unbelievable guy, great teammate. You know, I had an opportunity to play against him when he was in Seattle. Now, having as my teammate, it's pretty special. And just the preparation that he goes day in and day out every day, stuff that you guys don't get to see, but the players get to see, is that's why he has the success that he has at the plate.
One of the reasons that I love the Chris Taylor story, and you remember we talked about this when he had that walk-off hit in the wild card game, he will do anything that Dave Roberts asks of him just to be on the field. The guy will play every single position except pitch or catch. He'll do anything else that is asked of him. All he wants to do is be in the lineup. And he suffered through a pretty rough late season slump to the point where he was even benched in the wild card game. So he came out to pinch hit and ended up with that enormous home run. And in this game, yet another loud statement, which it happens to come before he hits free agency. So there's that. 4 for 5 with 3 home run and 6 RBI. Meanwhile, AJ Pollock also getting busy, 3 for 5 with 2 home run and 4 RBI. And as much as the offense was there and it was an embarrassment of riches for the Dodgers in this game 5, you cannot overlook what Dave Roberts had to do with 7 different guys pitching out of the bullpen, holding the Braves to 5 hits.
Each guy that came in, I mean, I can go on and on about each guy, and they were all fantastic. And obviously what, you know, Brustar did with Blake and, you know, Vessi, all the guys were fantastic.
And so Dave Roberts, he's the one with the Midas touch in game 5. Remember, it was Brian Snitker and the moves with the Atlanta starter, well, Atlanta bullpen mostly, in game number 4. And they really held the Dodgers at bay. And I had mentioned this stat previously more than once, that the top 5 hitters for the Dodgers were 0 for 17 on Wednesday. They were 8 for 23 on Thursday. And that does not include either Albert Pujols or Chris Taylor, as they were farther down in the lineup. So Freddie Freeman, he ends up with a 2-run home run, but really that's about it in terms of the offense. A couple more hits that were scattered. And, you know, whether he likes it, whether anyone likes it, the questions about last year and blowing the 2-0 lead and the 3-1 lead will come back and surface again, because the Braves are allowing the Dodgers to stay alive, the Dodgers had fought and scratched to stay alive in the series.
That's going to be the narrative, it seems, because every day it's brought up the last couple of days. So I don't think we have a choice until we kill that narrative. We're up 3-2 and we're going home. It's a great position to be in. I think we're going to be just fine. We got Ian on the mound. You know, he's already itching to get going. Got a long day tomorrow. Got to fly home, but we're going to be looking forward to getting in front of our home fans. Just really two good teams. It's going to be a good series, just like we thought. So coming down to game 6 and 7.
I have no worries at all. You know, I think it'll be good to get back home. And we got to, you know, it's a tough road to hoe when we get home. But, you know, these guys will come out on, Friday and Saturday.
He sounds like me.
And, you know, they'll do like they did yesterday. They're going to prepare. They're going to give it everything they got, like they always do.
Brian Snitker, confident in his Braves' ability to respond. And, of course, they've been through these ups and downs for the last 2.5 months, as Freddie Freeman had pointed out. He also has indicated that it'll be Ian Anderson, who starts in game number 6 on Saturday. It is Saturday, Brian Snitker. And we know it'll be Max Scherzer. And so Ian Anderson and Max Scherzer in game 6 back in Atlanta. And have you noticed, despite all of the activity, despite all of the, oh my gosh, the number of pitching changes in the championship series, despite the wild swings in momentum, both of the home teams are up 3-2 with game 6 at their parks. And so the Dodgers have managed to force this back to Atlanta, but the Braves get to host game 6. Meanwhile, the Astros will play in game 6 on Friday, and that will happen at 7 o'clock Central Time. The Red Sox on the brink while the Astros can close things out. Nathan Eovaldi versus Luis Garcia is what you'll get on Friday. And then Saturday, maybe a doubleheader, maybe not. I suspect, though I don't know this for sure, I haven't confirmed it, that if Houston eliminates Boston on Friday, that the Saturday game will be moved back later. I could be wrong, but I suspect it'll be moved back to, although it is a Saturday, so you never know, but to get that prime time on Saturday night. So we shall see. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. You can find me on Twitter, A Law Radio. Please, no more tips about cooking bacon. And also on our Facebook page, we will have the After Hours Game of the Week poll. This is going to be a doozy, except I say that every week, and last week it actually was close, but for the most part, it's usually not close. So we'll get that up there. Also, you'll hear from Chris Taylor a little bit later on, as well as Max Fried on what went wrong with his start, in which he allowed 5 runs on 8 hits into the 5th inning. But straight ahead, are the Cleveland Browns like running back you? No Nick Chubb, no Kareem Hunt, no freaking problem. I'm really impressed with what we saw from Kevin Stefanski and the Browns that were out there on the field, including Case Keenum. His first victory, I hate QB wins, but his first start in an NFL win in 2 years. So we'll get to football and the start of week 7 coming up. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
From the 4, why not? Give it to Johnson. He's off a rub hit. He going to the goal line. Touchdown! How about that? He's got the snap. Back to pass. In the pocket. He's going to load up. He's going into the end zone. It's picked off! They got it! John Johnson, the 3rd, picked it off in the end zone! Keenum's got it, and he's going to give the ball, and here comes Dearness Johnson. He's to the 15. He's going to get there. He got to the 12. First down at the 12-yard line. 58 seconds left. Denver can't stop the clock.
Give that man a game ball.
Listen to First Energy Stadium. Just listen.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Oh, what a night for young running back D'Ernest Johnson. So one of my favorite things about sports is another human being kind of walks onto this primetime stage from relative obscurity, not to his own locker room, not to his family, not to a lot of the fans, although some of the fans, but to walk onto this primetime stage, Thursday Night Football, in the absence of the two stars that generally run the Cleveland backfield, D'Ernest Johnson takes a hold of this opportunity and has the game and the night of his life. How can you not appreciate not only the fact that he stepped into a void to help his team, that he was ready, he was prepared, but also just appreciate these types of narratives in sports? Yeah, there's always X's and O's, and I will tell you, I'm a stats nerd just like anyone else, but it's the human interest stories that grab me. These are the ones that get to me. And this is, again, why analytics could never tell a whole story or paint a full picture. They can never tell you exactly what's going to happen because there aren't enough analytics in the world to predict how D'Ernest Johnson would step up on Thursday Night Football, would follow the game plan, would be ready to go, would finish with 22 carries for 146 yards and a touchdown, his first and only NFL touchdown. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. If you don't know his story, he didn't get drafted out of South Florida. And when he didn't get drafted, he had to bide his time, pay his bills a different way. And so he worked on a fishing boat. Then he made his way through the AAF, has been working behind Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt. But of course, the carries are limited when you've got two guys like that. They're both out with calf injuries on a short work week. No starting quarterback in Baker Mayfield. Instead, it's Case Keenum and D'Ernest Johnson that power the Browns to a win. Not to mention the offensive line that not only created holes to the tune of 182 rushing yards total for the Browns, but also protected Keenum. Keenum's not a super mobile quarterback. That's not his game. And what did Von Miller say beforehand? Whoever it was that he was faced up against, lined up against, he was going to kill him, and he was going to have a ton of snaps.
Calm myself down.
I don't know who the tackle is, and I'm going against.
What was that?
I'm going to kill him.
Who was that?
That was actually Vic Fangio, so that worked too.
No, it didn't. I was talking. Both those guys can zip it. So we'll get to Von Miller because we'll have to take a break before we can get to him. I want you to hear from D'Ernest as well as Kevin Stefanski and Case Keenum. There were a couple of moments where the Broncos were able to score and kind of pull themselves back within a field goal. But ultimately, it was the ball control of the Cleveland Browns and the fact that the Broncos just don't have an offense with a whole lot of pop, and they could not stop the run. So all of those factors and the way the Browns came to play didn't make excuses for the fact that they were missing so many guys on injury. And they were able to control the ball. Time of possession, nearly 37 minutes to just 23 for the Broncos. You control the ball, you control the game. And that's what the Browns were able to do. Case Keenum did not turn the ball over. No one else from Cleveland turned the ball over, and that's huge. So you control the ball. You don't turn it over. The only major issue would have been flags. They had 9 penalty flags. But otherwise, this was about as good as you could have scripted it on a short work week with second string and third string filling in. Jarvis Landry on and off the field. OBJ on and off the field. And it was the walking wounded. And yet the Browns were able to put together a win, and they're back above 500 at 4-3. So this was huge. Case Keenum picking up a victory for the first time in a couple of years. He goes 21 of 33 for 199 yards and a touchdown.
Case fought like he always does. I thought he orchestrated the operation. He took care of the football. And then that was a huge play at the end there, or not at the end, but in the end zone there on fourth down, and just to make a play, fighting for extra yardage. But he did a great job fighting.
Feels pretty good. It was a lot of fun tonight. We have a great group of guys, and they fought their tails off. As you just talked to D'Ernest, man, that was fun for him. The offensive line, fighting to get back. Chad fighting to get back. And Juice, those guys, they made some huge plays for us down the stretch. Defense played really, really well. I didn't watch a lot of them, but man, to hold those guys to what they did and some clutch moments was big.
All around, as good as you could have asked for the Cleveland Browns. Limping into this, there was bad news about Baker Mayfield. He also has a broken bone, so a fracture in that same shoulder where he's got the torn labrum. So we'll wait to see how quickly he heals. But now the mini bye until they face the Pittsburgh Steelers on Halloween. As for D'Ernest Johnson, as you can imagine, this is a dream come true for this young running back who's just trying to find his way and stick in the NFL.
Coming from, the fishing boat, I always dreamed of playing in the NFL, just playing in the AAF. At the same time, I always dreamed of getting here and just being able to be on this team is a blessing. And like I say, man, it's always a dream come true just to be here and just to be able to play, and start and just come out and help the team win. That's the best feeling.
It's one of those things in sports where you get these stories fairly routinely. An obscure athlete that not a whole lot of people know about, and yet they get an opportunity. And because these are the best of the best, they grab it with both hands and turn it into a career performance. So we'll hear a little more from the Browns as well as from the Broncos in the wake of what is their fourth straight loss. Remember when they were 3-0? But that 3-0 start was built against teams that were stuck and are still stuck in many cases. And now the Broncos have kind of lost their way, especially offensively, putting a lot of extra pressure on their defense, which has injuries of its own. But good for Cleveland, able to hit the mini bye and start to heal a little bit with this victory at home, and a lot to like about what they did both offensively and defensively. So more on week 7, the start of week 7, plus the rest of week 7. It's staring us in the face. We're glad to have you with us on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page, too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Keenum under center, I formation, drops back to pass, throws to his left, pass is caught, Johnny Stanton into the end zone, touchdown Cleveland. It's his first touchdown reception of the year. Johnny Stanton has given the Browns a 16-7 lead.
Keenum's got it, and he's going to give the ball, and here comes D'Ernest Johnson. He's to the 15. He's going to get there. He got to the 12. First down at the 12-yard line. 58 seconds left. Denver can't stop the clock.
Give that man a game ball.
Listen to First Energy Stadium. Just listen.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
A lot of firsts, a lot of career performances, a lot of big smiles in Cleveland where the dog pound supported the Browns. The offensive line created running holes. The defense was able to limit the Broncos and Case Keenum, and the offense played turnover-free football. The big disparity was in rushing the ball and then stopping the run. So the Cleveland Browns had 182 yards rushing, and the defense held Denver to just 41. In fact, with Teddy Bridgewater, his running back Melvin Gordon actually caught a touchdown pass, not ran for a touchdown pass. Jim Donovan is the play-by-play voice of the Browns radio network. I listened to a good portion of this game on Browns radio, so it's always fun to hear him. You can understand why Browns fans love him. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Couldn't have scripted this one better if you're Kevin Stefanski and the Browns coaching staff.
Whatever it took, offensively, defensively, special teams, I thought the guys really played complimentary ball and got a team win. And you know, I could single out a bunch of guys, but D'Ernest Johnson to me is just a warrior. Great teammate, what he's fought through in his career, and then to go have a night like that and to end it how he did on that third down, I thought was just outstanding.
We didn't play good defense tonight. We let them drive it too much, way too many third and ones. And we didn't play well enough to win the game. They run it good. You know, even though they were missing their two backs, any good running game starts with the offensive line, and they have a good line, and they do a good job of blocking, and they have a good scheme. We didn't find a rhythm in the run game well enough in the first and second down passing game, and we didn't convert on third down. And when you don't do that, you don't get enough plays, and we weren't getting enough three and outs or stopping them quick enough. So it's a problem, and it's a team-wide problem.
So not only the inability to run the ball, but the ineffectiveness at stopping the run, and now the Broncos are in a hole where they've lost four consecutive games and have gone from being 3-0 to being 3-4. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. The Broncos continue to have a quarterback problem. They traded for Teddy Bridgewater. They were in on some other potential trades like the Matthew Stafford, but the asking price too high. What the Rams gave the Detroit Lions turned out to be a price that no other team could match. Deshaun Watson, that turned, of course, in the offseason. And while the Dolphins may still be making a push for Deshaun before the trade deadline, most teams kind of dropped off in terms of looking for a trade with the Texans once all of these civil lawsuits came to light. And it is a risk not knowing what the NFL will do. For now, there's no need to do anything. The investigation's still ongoing, and the Texans don't want to play him, and he doesn't want to play. And so there's no issue there in terms of him getting on the field anytime soon, as we've seen. But if he were to get traded to Miami and the Dolphins would want to use him as quickly as he could get ready, you wonder if then the NFL might make a move. So in terms of the Broncos, which is kind of how I went down that quarterback hole, they continue to try a variety of different solutions to this impactful position on the field. And while Teddy Bridgewater has some nice qualities and you can see the flashes there, he's not an elite quarterback. And so they just keep cycling through quarterbacks. Both Drew Locke and Teddy Bridgewater had a great preseason. I remember Vic Fangio talking about how hard it was to make this choice, how much they pushed each other. Now, they've also had injury problems too, but every team has that now. And so they cannot be used as an excuse. And Bridgewater knows that this feels like just a really bad cycle they're stuck in.
Just want to get this thing turned around. Let me get a couple of days off, man, get some guys healthy, and try to do it again in 10 days. Obviously, we got to start better. We got to stay on the field. We just can't wait till the second half. We got to come out playing fast and make our opponents feel us. And you watch us today, it's the same story as it's been some of the past couple of weeks.
You watch us today, it's the same story that it's been the past couple of weeks, to the tune of four consecutive losses. Now, we know Von Miller had put pressure on himself before this game to essentially take control and to be a one-man wrecking crew so that the Broncos defense could then give the offense the support it needed and they could stop this losing skid. So these were just this is just a portion of what he had to say going into this game against Cleveland.
It's on me. I don't play in, all type of, games, and I don't perform well in all type of games, and I got to play well in this game. I will play well in this game. I'm going to go off. It's going to be a good game for me. I don't want to, guarantee a win, for my teammates. But I guarantee I don't want to put the pressure on those guys this time. I'll put the pressure on me, and I'm going to have a great game. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to play well, get a couple of sacks. And, if I can do that, then we will win. If you look at, this season, the first three games, I had a couple of sacks and we won those games. And these last three games, I didn't do as much. So, if I can play well and I can get sacks and I can find a way, to disrupt the game, we'll win. So the pressure's on me to play well. I will play well. I don't know who the tackle is and I'm going against, but I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him and the other guy, too, on the other side. And I'm going to play extremely well and I'm going to make plays for my team. And, I'm going to set us up to win this game for sure.
I applaud anyone who will raise the bar for himself or herself publicly and say, this is on me. I'm going to take the pressure. But understandably now, Von Miller's going to get killed because he, and I'm using my air quotations, because not only did he not have any sacks, he did have a tackle in the backfield of Case Keenum, but also got tangled up with one of his own teammates just before halftime and hobbled off the field with an ankle injury. This is why it was scary for Vaughn. Same ankle that he hurt just before the regular season kicked off a year ago, and it caused him to miss the entire season. And so there he is hobbling off, scared, of course. You could see him out there kind of pounding the grass and really frustrated. The good news is that the x-rays were negative, and afterwards, Vaughn was talking about this moment where, man, the season kind of flashed before his eyes.
Right when it happened and I got hit, I felt, I felt it, and, I just said a quick prayer. I didn't want to put, any, pressure on it at first. So, I took it slow, and, I walked to the tent. I got in the tent. They checked it out. They tested it in all directions. It was good. I asked them, could I run? And they said, no, just take it easy. Went in the locker room. We did the x-rays, and everything felt good. Everything came out good, so I felt like I had a chance to go back out. Started to run and started doing some of the things that I would normally do on the football field. And it was a little tender on the inside. And, it wasn't, enough to get the approval from the trainers to let me go back out. So I had to sit out the second half. But, I feel comfortable. Like I said before, I feel like my pride is hurt more than, my ankle.
The guy who put it all out there before the game and is going to be candid and honest now. My pride is hurt more than my ankle, which actually is great news for the Broncos. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. John is listening in Greenfield, Massachusetts. John, welcome to the show.
Hello, Amy. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, sir.
Okay. I think that gutsy call in the third quarter to go for it in the red zone on fourth down, to get a turning point of the game, that might be the turning point of their entire season.
Yeah, we'll see how it moves forward from this point. But, yeah, the confidence of Kevin Stefanski and, of course, not wanting to put the ball back in the hands of the Broncos because it was a tight game. It's huge. And we've seen other examples, even in the last week, in which it didn't work out, right? So talking about the Buffalo Bills against the Titans. But I think generally athletes appreciate that their coach has that confidence in them, allows them to try to go for it in a situation like that where the game is kind of hanging in the balance. But also the fact that you don't want to give it back to your opponent. You want to be able to control the ball as much as possible. And the Browns did that very well tonight.
when you consider contrast that, I mean, in the red zone, they go for it. And then when Belichick back in 09 against probably the last person you want to give the ball back to, which was Peyton Manning, go for it on fourth and two. And he absolutely got crucified after that call.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. I don't know, John, if you were paying attention earlier this week with Sean McDermott choosing to go for it on fourth down up close to the goal line, so about 3-yard line, as opposed to kicking a field goal to tie. And ultimately, because they didn't get the yardage, it was like fourth and inches on the 3-yard line, they didn't kick a field goal. They ended up losing because they were out of time. So, yeah, when a coach makes that call and it doesn't work out, of course, they're going to get crucified. And I do remember that moment that you're talking about. But, again, I think most athletes will tell you they'd rather have the opportunity to go for it and to have the game in their hands as opposed to giving the ball back to the team, the other team.
Was that a design run, or was that one of those Keenum was running for his life to get that first down? I did not get to see the play.
Well, I think it was a designed run, I think. I'd have to go back and look at it again, but the fourth and three that you're talking about, which he goes straight up the middle, generally, when you're talking about a quarterback who's going up the middle, that's a designed play, not one in which he's scrambling, quote-unquote.
Well, it was described in the postgame on ESPN as a scramble. So a scramble could be one of two ways. It could have been a design run, or it could have been running for its life. Unfortunately, Dover Newspapers was asleep at the time.
Newspapers? Did you say newspapers?
Yes, as in those hard copy pieces of paper that actually have news fit the print.
Yeah, kind of late, though.
I actually do that.
By the time you get them, you could have had all that information elsewhere. Also, they get the ink all over your fingers, which is my biggest thing. I don't mind reading a newspaper. I just can't stand getting the ink all over my fingers.
Such is life, and then I have to pivot from the First Amendment to the Second Amendment. But
all right, John, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate it. I know there's still a lot of people who read newspapers, and that's cool. He's up early with the newspapers. The Browns did not have to worry about going into a mini bye with a loss. They are back above 500 and can now breathe and try to get healthy these next few days. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.